Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
The Snapcast is a production of the Nonprofit Snapshot. Please visit us at nonprofitsnapshot.org to learn more about our consulting work and the ways we can help your organization continue to make the world a better place.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm your host, Mickey Desai. Very happy today to be doing this case study panel presentation with some friends that happily came to the table to talk about a program evaluation that they had done for an organization called MOKA. That's M-O-K-A. But first, let me introduce the people around the table. We have Dr. Sal Alimo, who's an associate professor at Grand Valley's School of Public Nonprofit and Health Administration. Did I get that right, Sal?
You did. Thank you.
Excellent. And Angel Reese is a performance improvement specialist and corporate compliance officer for MOKA. Hello, Angel.
Hi.
And lastly, Tracy Hamlet. Tracy is the executive director of MOKA. How are you doing, Tracy?
I'm doing well. Hi, Mickey.
Hi. Yes, thank you. So first, let's talk about what MOKA is and what you guys do. And then let's jump into this this evaluation process that you guys did. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a long time, so I'm eager to get into it, but I think it does make sense to describe to our listeners what exactly MOKA does, what's your mission, things like that. Tracy, you want to do that for us?
Yeah, I'd love to. MOKA is a nonprofit serving individuals, children and adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities throughout West Michigan area, right along the lake shore here. We have been in business for over 40 years. We're founded by families who wanted to make sure their children were included in community. And so our mission for inclusion continues. It's a big part of what we do.
Got it. And remind me what MOKA stands for.
It actually stands for the counties that we serve people. So Muskegon, Ottawa, Kent, and Allegan.
Oh, okay. Got it. So how did you guys get started on this program evaluation? Was the need internal? Did the opportunity come to you externally? Where did all that begin?
Yeah, so our previous executive director, Tom Zmolik, reached out to Sal to engage him in the discussion about program evaluation. We had made some attempts internally, but really needed some outside expertise. So we started that. Has it been 4 years, Sal? 3 years ago?
I think it's about three.
About three.
Time flies. But the evaluation didn't take 3 years.
No.
Yeah.
No, we started the process of evaluation with Sal, and then we've been working on other aspects of integrating it into our organization for the last few years.
I see. Got it. Sal, when you first visited MOKA, what were your impressions of the organization?
Yeah, I was familiar with MOKA before because Tom Zmolik, the previous executive director, and I had done a workshop together for the Johnson Center for Philanthropy. We had stayed in touch. We were always exchanging journal articles and books to read and meeting for coffee and for lunch. And I had visited MOKA's offices several times before then, so I was familiar with who they were, what they did, was very impressed already with what the organization had accomplished. So when the opportunity came around, I accepted it willingly. It's always value added when you play a consultant role where you can help an organization that you already know, that you're friendly with, that you already believe in what they do. So it was a nice fit for me.
Excellent. And what were you charged with? I mean, was there an actual charge? How did you get the whole thing rolling?
That was kind of negotiated. You know, Tom originally approached me and he was interested in improving how they do evaluation. And he very succinctly explained why, to better tell the story, better be more accountable to the government funders. A lot of MOKA's revenue, the overwhelming majority of the revenue comes from a government source. So there was some accountability, compliance issues there. And they wanted to improve on what was already some pretty, a solid foundation in evaluation. So I counter-offered and said, okay, I can help you get started with that, but let's first look at this concept of evaluation capacity, which I think a lot of nonprofits skip over. And as a result, they encounter problems in evaluation. So what did MOKA's skills look like in terms of, being able to do the evaluation? Angel had already started a lot of this work, which was good. The culture around evaluation, is it supportive? Is there a budget for the evaluation? All of these type of capacity issues. So he agreed that that was a good way to go, and we got started.
Angel, how did your role in this whole process kick off? Did Sal just show up at your one door one day and said, "Hand me all your spreadsheets"?
No, nothing like that. But okay. That did come a little bit later, essentially. I've been with Mocha for about 15 years. So I didn't start in this position originally. So I've seen a lot of growth in Mocha. But when I took on the role of performance improvement specialist, it was really to look at what we were already doing, trying to get some standardization across what we had in place and try to essentially improve. So we have a lot of regulatory agencies that we have to comply with, but we wanted to go beyond just compliance standards and go into more quality standards to call our own. So
And what would you say were the biggest challenges? Or I don't know, maybe there were no challenges. Maybe getting started was easy, but what was it like getting started in the formal evaluation process?
Well, actually, Sal actually made it pretty easy. He guided us through the whole process, actually. Mm-hmm. And so from there, I mean, we were pretty energized after that. So we were able to kind of just take that information and kind of get started in program evaluation. So it was pretty exciting.
You said something which catches me a little bit by surprise. We were pretty energized by that. I think that there's a general misconception that evaluations are completely taxing and demoralizing affairs. I don't know of a single nonprofit that looks forward to being evaluated in any way. How is this an energizing process?
Well, we're always being evaluated. I mean, we have audits, peer reviews, so we're CARF accredited. So we go through this process a lot. So I think, just another avenue. So we're familiar with people coming in, looking at what we're doing, and we're always open to the feedback that they give us. So we've always had that culture here. So I really appreciate that. So knowing that Sal was going to come in and kind of help us to get a better framework on what we were doing, from my standpoint, it was exciting, but also other people were really energized about it too, because we were actually about to start, moving a little bit further ahead. I mean, our bar was already set pretty high, and we like to keep going. So that's basically what Sal helped us to do.
Sal, go ahead.
Yeah. And, Tracy was the program director at the time. So you had Tom, the executive director, and Tracy, the program director, who were both very supportive of this. You know, this kind of consulting relationship and engagement cannot be successful unless you have the top-down support from people in key leadership positions. And Tom had already done a good job of explaining this assignment to the leadership team. So when it got time for me to interview those folks one-on-one, they conveyed clearly to me they understood the value of the assignment. And I think one of the keys, too, is because I had interviewed 56 staff of Mocha one-on-one of various units across horizontally, various levels of the hierarchy vertically. And I was working hard to try to get them to connect the dots that if we can evaluate our programs formally and get some really solid information to be able to convey the impact of what we're doing with the people we serve and better tell our story, that's going to add value to their work individually. So I tried to focus almost like a salesman in what's in it for the individual as well as the organization. And that if people can make that transformation, change that paradigm, it's incredibly powerful because now they have a renewed value of their work.
I see. So just to recap, the culture within the organization really lent itself to a successful project just from the get-go.
Oh, I think so. I think culture is incredibly important. And, there are a lot of organizations, to your previous point, Mickey, about most nonprofits not being excited about evaluation. They do it, grudgingly, reluctantly, kicking and screaming, if you will. Right. But Mocha already had an appetite and hunger to want to sincerely do this. It wasn't just for show. And that really makes the assignment a lot easier and more likely to succeed.
So let's talk about exactly what you did. Let's take a look at how did you begin? Where would your data collection occur? You said you interviewed 52 people. What else? What other kind of data inputs did you have?
Yeah, there's an instrument called, it's called the ROLE instrument. Its acronym stands for Readiness for Organizational Learning and Evaluation. And it's a tool developed by Hallie Preskill and Rosalie Torres. Hallie Preskill is very well known in the evaluation field as a scholar and a researcher and evaluator. And that was completed by, correct me if I'm wrong, by almost 300 Mocha employees. I think it was in the upper 290s or something like that.
Wow.
So we got the majority of their almost 500 employees to complete it. And some of the dimensions in the tool concern leadership, culture, learning. Because I think what a lot of people miss is that evaluation is, if done right, is supposed to be a learning opportunity. We're learning about why we exist in the first place. We're learning about how our programs are designed, how they're delivered. And when we evaluate the programs, we're learning how to improve them. So it's all about learning. And I tabulated the results of the role instrument. We looked at some of the strong areas to build off of. We looked at some of the holes and the weaknesses, which there weren't many, to try to shore up and fill in.
Excellent. Tracy, did the shift to you becoming executive director happen while all this was in progress?
Well, the program evaluation was completed before the shift to me being the executive director. What started after I changed was helping form the committee that we did internally to build the capacity we needed to keep doing this program evaluation.
Okay.
So that's what we've been doing probably for the last 2 years, is forming a committee that can continue to carry on the work.
Right. Got it. So Sal, please take the ball and run with it. What did you do? How did you,
Yeah. So after that triage type work of the interviews, and the role instrument tabulation to get that baseline lay of the land of where Mocha is with all of this, then they had four different programs. So I suggested that we get a variety of stakeholders around the table. And this is when we actually were meeting in person around tables, if you remember those days. And we had four different program logic model development sessions where I led and facilitated the session. So it was a mix of staff, volunteers, and we got a couple of parents of clients to come. And we developed logic models for all four of the programs, which were then slightly tweaked and revised by Angel and some of the other staff. And they'll serve as the basis to then develop what's called an outcome measurement framework. So once you develop a logic model, you understand how this program operates and what the intended outcomes are for who that program serves. You then can figure out, well, how do we measure the outcomes? What data do we need to measure? How do we go out and get that data? Who do we get it from? And then once that framework's completed, really Mocha then has a pretty solid basis to just dive in and go in and start evaluating the programs.
Sal, real quick, what is a logic model?
A logic model actually almost looks like the old flow charts from the business world. They actually evolved from the business world from the 1950s and 60s. And they usually move left to right, starting with inputs and ending with outcomes on the end. So it usually go from inputs to activities to outputs, and then outcomes at three potentially different levels, initial or beginning or short-term, intermediate, which are typically bridging outcomes. And then, you know, the one we're all interested in, those long-term outcomes for the people we serve.
Right. So like you say, a process flow document that includes your inputs, which would be things like staff, money, time,
right,
supplies, stuff like that.
That's
and
right.
And then the activities and which are the actual actions of the program itself.
Right.
And then the initial outputs, including long-term outcomes. Well, the initial outputs are a little different. Outputs are not the same as outcomes, I guess.
Right. Outputs typically are the numerical summations of the activities. So some generic examples, you know, how many hours did the client spend with the teacher or the counselor or psychotherapist? How many workshops did the participant attend? How many clients did we serve? You know, that type of thing. And they're important, but they are different in outcomes. Outcomes really get at the desired change we want to see. So in Mocha's case, in serving people with disabilities and children with autism, what are the desired changes we want to see in those people based on these programs?
Got it. So once you get your logic model, what did you say followed that? The logic model led to what?
Oh, it led to the outcome measurement framework. So once all the stakeholders are in agreement around what our intended outcomes are for each of the programs, then we have to have that discussion of how we're going to go about measuring those outcomes. So talking about things like indicators, and, you know, indicators pretty much self-explanatory. What indicates that this client has attained this outcome? So how do we know that this client has attained this specific outcome, whether it be gain knowledge, improve skills, change attitude, change behavior? And then what kind of data do we need to support that outcome? Where do we get that data? Who do we collect it from? And the sources of data, which could be a mix of clients, parents, the actual counselors or instructors themselves. Right. And it varies. You know, one outcome may have one indicator. Another outcome may have five. It just depends on what the outcome is and then what's the best way to measure it.
Right. Please continue.
Yeah. So after the outcome measurement framework is done, then that's really the roadmap now. Now we've got everything. We've got logic models that help us understand the programs. We've got the framework which tells us how we're going to go about measuring. And then Mocha really just needs to figure out the logistics. Who's going to do this evaluation? How many staff are necessary? Do we have a budget for it? How much time is it going to take? And where do we fit in the evaluation within the life cycle of all of the rest of our operations? You know, because, mm-hmm. you know, the world doesn't stop for evaluation. You know, Mocha still has to serve its clients. You know, they still got to show up to work every day. They got to do all the wonderful things that they do. And that's where Mocha's administration leadership has to somehow finesse and massage and wait, you know, where do we put this evaluation in? So we give it the proper time and attention, but at the same time, the other extreme, it's not intruding on our core work.
What were the findings? Is it okay to jump that far ahead in the process? Or
I'm going to defer to Angel and Tracy for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. Angel, Tracy, what would you say?
Yes. So for us, our findings was that we had to figure out a way to, you know, essentially use all this information that Sal has now taught us and that we had gained from this process and take it and figure out like, okay, so how do we get started? How are we going to sustain this process, even, and how are we going to just embed it in our culture as well? So we started, having conversations. And one of the biggest things that we did, we looked at, you know, essentially what already works at Mocha, our strong points, our bright spots. And so we have a lot of different systems that work really well for our organization. Like we do, we have committees, we have work groups, our mission by itself. And then we have a really strong policy development process as well. So we took those things and that kind of lent us sort of our framework to kind of start forming what essentially happened. We ended up forming an actual committee to help ground this evaluation work.
So once again, the thing that I want to point out is that you guys, you know, to use the same metaphor I used with Sal a second ago, you guys took the ball from him. Yes. And then ran with it. He didn't come in with a bunch of prescriptive actions that you just then followed along.
Correct.
And did.
Correct.
And, okay. So you came up with your own prescriptive actions. You built on what was strong. What else happened?
Well, so within those, the committee. So when we have our internal committee, so we have committees and basically they help us to move a lot of our initiatives forward. And we use those standing committees to move a lot of different projects, a lot of different work within the organization. We currently have five committees. And this is our newest one, our newest committee. And we named it Impact Committee, meaning improving through action. Okay. So we did that. So our foundation for committees also has really strong supports from admins. We have a diverse cross-section of employees, different skill set, different roles within the organization. Some of our committees even have individuals serve where we can bring them in as well. So, because we believe every voice needs to be heard and is equal. So, everybody has, you know, a part to play in the committees.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was the hardest part of the whole thing then?
Probably forming, because we hadn't really formalized this before, you know, and it was, essentially when we formed this committee, we were really strategic about hand picking people that were really passionate about program evaluation. And so taking, bringing them in all together and sort of, trying to figure out, you know, the best way to have some focus and make this a really effective process. So, that took us about a year and a half to really get, to get things formed and to, start really learning from even just that core team. And we recently even started including new members as well, because we felt we were at a place that we could start including more people into the conversation to build off of.
Tracy, has there been a downside to this process?
I think that the patience that's needed to form a committee to, learn together and not actually start doing the work yet. I don't know if it's a downside, but it took patience to know that you're going to form, you're going to develop this shared language, you're going to grow together and before you can actually start digging in. But I think that was extremely valuable and I wouldn't do it any differently. Mm. Sal mentioned that we had a compliance culture because of our funders. We have a long history of, we have on any given week, at least one audit or review in our agency. Sometimes there's two or three going on at the same time.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So yeah. We were really oriented organizationally to complying with all the different compliance arenas. I think probably the challenging part that Sal challenged us to do early on in the program evaluation was to come up with a list of everything we had to comply to. I don't think we were able to meet that. that Sal's requirement that we do that. No, right. We couldn't do it. So the big shift for us was to really spend the time it took to dig into what does it mean to lead in the area of evaluation? What does it mean to tell our funders what we should be measuring?
Right.
And so I don't think it was a downside. It just took time and patience.
Sure. Well, again, much like everything else you guys do, I mean, there's rarely ever an instantaneous result for anything, right? So
exactly.
Excellent. So once you've got the committee together, let me move forward again. What happened after that? How's the committee been operating? What are they charged with? Please tell us about that.
So the committee worked on what we do with all of our committees. We have a scope picture. What's the scope of our committee? What are we charged to do? And then we designed that picture. And then from there, we start talking about what do we need to learn? So we picked up the book, I believe, fairly early on called Tyranny of the Metrics. And that book was a way to help us understand how some measurements can result in poor outcomes because they end up kind of being derailed. Mm. So it wasn't a book, again, that prescriptive. It didn't tell us what to measure. It told us what to avoid in terms of pitfalls. It gave us a shared language as a committee. We read it together. We discussed it. And that's been really helpful in terms of pushing back with funders since then when they've come up with measurements that could inadvertently be a pitfall. It allowed us to have pretty good conversations early on and avoid some bad measurements being put on us.
Right. The Tyranny of Metrics, you have a shot of this in the notes that you sent to me by Jerry Z. Mueller. The title of that makes me laugh. I just think that's hilarious. But okay, please continue. I don't want to interrupt your
train of thought. We also studied a little bit Amy Edmondson's The Fearless Organization, Building a Psychologically Safe Workplace. She's got a YouTube video under 12 minutes. And we talked a little bit about how we wanted to make sure our committee was a welcoming learning place. So to pick up back on Sal's comment that evaluation is about learning, we wanted our committee to be about learning and not to feel like someone could come to us and say they struggled with a measurement or they didn't get the outcome that we thought we were going to get. We wanted that to be a good learning discussion and not our natural tendencies as humans are, we want to get it right. We want to bring you good news, but we want to learn. So we've spent a lot of focus in our committee forming on how do we create a learning environment? Mm-hmm. How do we create a structure? So when programs come in and talk with us about where they are in terms of measurements, that's a learning experience for them.
So what were the pitfalls? Where were the pitfalls?
Yeah, so one is gaming the system. One of the pitfalls brought up in the book is gaming the system. And that he uses some things that have happened across the country in terms of like police reports. You know, when you want to make your numbers look good, you may alter the way you classify something. We wanted to avoid gaming the system. We wanted to avoid creaming, which that's essentially taking clients that are likely to get your numbers up or sound or feel better or be improved.
I see.
Those were some of the pitfalls. There's quite a few that he mentions. Yeah. Teaching to the test, as opposed, again, you're just trying to get your numbers to look good. You're not really helping people learn.
Right. So, got it. So, and of course, these are things you have to look out for on a day-to-day basis. Yeah.
Yes.
Was there anything unexpected? Did you discover anything that you didn't know before the whole process started?
I think it reinforced what we knew, which is just because you have a bunch of things you can measure. We added an electronic health record a couple of years ago too. And it gave us a lot of opportunity to measure a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean we should measure them at all. So just because you can doesn't mean you should. And it's given us good shared language around not going after things just because we can get those measurements.
Right.
It's been really reinforcing, and we probably have to repeat that to each other a lot.
Well, I like what you say here. And I don't know if we're, I mean, maybe this is an original quote. Not everything that matters is measurable, and not everything that is measurable is meaningful. And I think that's brilliant. But on the other hand, you still have to measure what you can measure. Is that a fair thing to say?
That's absolutely fair. And sometimes that's a challenge.
Yeah.
That's probably been our biggest challenge.
Really? Okay. So, my last question for you before we wrap up today is, you said here that you're very careful to make sure that you do a number of things, which I think have a lot to do to establishing the right culture within an organization, like honoring your employees' judgment and experience. Don't lose sight of the people that are behind the numbers. Can you say a little bit more about that real quick?
Yeah. So we've learned a lot about making sure we understand what's happening with people. So when people, our programs bring their impact stories and bring their data, we want them to tell us the story. Tell us, how is this really impacting? What are people saying? Talk to us about that. And that has, I think that's been an unexpected learning for us, that we've been able to gather stories in the course of this that we didn't expect. So the qualitative measurements have come out and even more. And I think we've valued them even more than we did before.
Right. Very cool. Angel, any parting thoughts before we wrap up today?
Well, I appreciate, being able to see this, this whole process from the start with Sal and where we're, and where we're going towards as we strengthen, what we're doing at Mocha around program evaluation. It wasn't the easiest process. And yes, and some of it also takes, some resources, and in nonprofits, that's sometimes scarce. But we have a lot of dedicated employees that work for us, and we hire to that as well. We're really intentional about who we hire, that we have lifelong learners that they're passionate about, about working in this type of field. And so we everything we do, every touch point within our organization, we try to embed our culture. So you'll see us even taking trainings that, even funder led,
sure.
We might take them and Mocha-ize them so that we can, so it fits our culture more so, but still giving them the content that they need, but they're also learning our culture at the same time.
Well, it's a credit to all of you guys, especially if you have over 300 employees. I think Sal said you had close to 500. That's just amazing that you could foster that kind of a cultural acceptance across that kind of that body of people. That's, more power to you guys. Well done. Sal, we've got a handful of minutes left. What would you say, what would you advise for other nonprofits that are thinking about going through this process?
Yeah, and that's why I think the Mocha case study is such a great one for other nonprofits to learn from. I was making a short list here of things. First of all, Tracy had already talked about moving from a compliance culture to one of learning. All the research on compliance tells us that it is counterintuitive and tugs away at learning. So you have to find a sweet spot for being compliant while not compromising learning. And Mocha has been very intentional on understanding that and balancing that. Secondly, appreciative inquiry. Tracy and Angel were talking about building off of what was already there. And that's my approach to these assignments. I don't come from a deficit or problem perspective. I look at what they're already doing well, and get everybody to rally around that and build off of that, which is much more conducive to employees' morale, psyche, confidence level. Probably the biggest key to success was the top-down support from people like Tom and Tracy and Angel as well. Angel could have said, well, wait a minute, we're already doing some of this work. Why do we got to do all this stuff? This is going to make my life miserable. And working with Angel was a joy, an absolute joy. But probably the most important thing, culture was mentioned. Mocha made a presentation to the Johnson Center for Philanthropy at Grand Valley on culture. And I was impressed with the simple fact that most nonprofits, I don't even believe, are even make an effort to be in tune with their culture. These folks were. So I think that made it easier. Once I came along to do my assignment, they translated that, okay, we've got to build this culture around learning. We see appreciative inquiry. We see evaluation as a learning process. And then it all just came together very nicely. So all of that, plus what Mocha did in terms of forming an evaluation related committee, highly recommend that. So I think if you follow these steps and go through these things sequentially, I think any nonprofit that desires to improve how they do the evaluation could be successful. And that's even for small nonprofits that are nowhere near Mocha's size.
Right. Good stuff, you guys. Thanks for being this first case study that we get to do on this podcast. I really appreciate that. And if any other nonprofits that are listening would like to present a case study of an intervention that they, you know, undertook with the way that they manage themselves or the way they look at their programs, we'd love to feature you on the Nonprofit Snapcast. Just drop me a line via the Facebook page or the website. That's nonprofitsnapcast.org. Angel, Tracy, Sal, I can't thank you guys enough for making the time. I wish we had several more hours to go through this in more granular detail, but it is the Snapcast. So I hope we get an excuse to talk to each other again about related things sometime in the future.
Thank you, Mickey.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, guys.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.